Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, another huge week for men's golf. Volleyball dominating its matches on the road. Soccer with a big road victory. But we're going to start with men's basketball. Just 3 weeks away from the start of the regular season, we had a lot of fun this past Thursday night during the first Hoops and Howl event. Sold out crowd at First National Bank Arena for that. Crowd was able to enjoy a great night while watching the team scrimmage, which actually ended on a game-winning putback at the buzzer by Jalen Hampton. And joining us now is a member of Ryan Pinon's coaching staff, a guy who spent 22 seasons in the NBA with the Rockets, Blazers, Timberwolves, Jazz, and the Bulls. And it's an absolute thrill now to have him in Jonesboro with us. Welcome in, Dean Cooper. How you doing, Coach?
I'm great. Thank you guys for having me on, and I appreciate it. It's been great in Jonesboro so far, to say the least. Everybody's been awesome. As I mentioned to you the other night when I saw you at Hoops and Howls, and it's how, you know, welcoming and helpful and willing people are to get you on your feet and make you feel at home here has been really cool. I haven't had a lot of college experiences, and this certainly has been a great one.
Well, I guess that's a good place to start, because we talk about all your experience in the NBA. And yeah, you've had some other college experiences, but I would think it would take a special situation for you to go to the college level. So why Arkansas State, and why is Ryan Pinon someone that you wanted to work with?
Yeah, really good question. I'll answer it in a couple parts. Number one, we can start with Coach Pinon. We had a little bit of interaction at different points throughout our careers. He was just getting the MBA when I was at Chicago, and then he was at Alabama. Nate Oates and I are close. I did some consulting with him and then got to know him a bit better over the last couple of years. And we shared an agent at one time, so I knew what he was about. When I say what he was about, like who he is as a person, forget about the basketball part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so big on the sharing the game and all the social media stuff he's done for years, which in large part is what he's known for, being such an advocate of sharing the game. But I knew our basketball would align because we're both analytically driven. I was with the Rockets when we were the first team to basically commit to threes and rims. We got crucified for it. We were just trying to play the math and win the margins. Now everybody does it, or certainly the teams that win at a high level do it. So I knew that was in alignment. I knew Arkansas State was a place where you could have success. People have won here. So that was important to me. And then just thankfully for me, my permanent house is in Nashville, like we talked about before we got on live. It's fairly close to home, 4 hours, so easy commute back and forth for my wife. So it just kind of was all aligned. And thus far, even though we're 3 weeks out from playing our first game when stuff really matters, everything I've hoped for has met and or exceeded what I expected it to be.
You mentioned Coach Pinon. You said what he's all about, and you talked about on a personal level first, but I would like a basketball person to explain to our listeners and A-State fans from a basketball standpoint what Coach Pinon is all about.
Well, first and foremost, on a personal level, I'll just say this, like we every day, literally every single day, we show some video prior to our basketball X's and O's technical video of how to make our players grow as players, either from like listening to NBA players talk or players from other sports talk about what it's like to be a professional. He has, and I've helped do this, and I think it's part of why he wanted me here, was if you walked into our arena and our practices and our film sessions and all those things, and then you went down to Memphis or up to the Bulls or wherever, it would look just like an NBA facility and how it feels and what's getting done. So part of that is growing in them as humans. So every day we have some video before the technical, the basketball part of it that we show literally every day. So then there's the basketball part of it. And I thought I watched a lot of film. That's kind of how I made my way in this business. And coach is 17, 18 years younger than me. I might have been at his like level. I still watch a lot of film. But, I mean, you talk about somebody that's obsessed with studying basketball in and of itself and how to do things and get better and constantly trying to learn. I mean, he literally tips the scale. And I don't say that lightly. Like, yeah, he tips the scale.
Functioning psychopath was his own description of himself.
I would say that that is a very accurate description. Yes.
So, and there's a lot of different avenues we could take, but just overall, what you did during your time in the NBA, you served in so many different roles: video coordinator, scout, director of scouting. You were a VP of player personnel, head coach in the G League. How do you think just kind of serving in all those many types of roles kind of helped mold you into the person, the coach that you are right now?
Well, I'll say this. I think I was beyond fortunate. And I don't say that just because it's the route that I took. I really do believe that is that because I've done so many roles, I mean, I've basically done everything, and I have been a head coach in G League, but I've done everything except basically be the general manager and the head coach in the NBA. I literally did every other job. So to me, where that's helped me is in a couple areas. One, I have an understanding of what everybody's role in the organization is to make the organization as optimal as it can possibly be. So I have an idea of it. So I know how to help that person in that role. And I also have empathy for the person in that role, knowing what they have to go through. To me, that's been really important. Like, even I always use this example, and our guy I lived with after college for a couple of years was a guy named Mike Wells, who went to my rival high school, but he worked for McDonald's and he went way up the corporate ladder. But Jeff Bezos can't just buy McDonald's. Elon Musk doesn't. Like, you have to go in and learn how to cook the fries and cook the hamburger and hook up the CO2 tanks and all those things. And that's in part why McDonald's has succeeded and grown to level it has, is like the people running it have to know every single thing that goes on in the organization. And I think my career, thankfully, I didn't skip any steps and sort of mirrors that. Now, does that make me great? I don't know. I'm not claiming that, but I do appreciate the fact that I had to do all those things.
I guess a catchphrase to some people, I'd say not catchphrase, but just sort of a term that maybe fans hear thrown around now is player development stuff. And maybe they don't know it. I would put myself in this that doesn't have a full understanding of the difference between developing a player and coaching them. So give me your most dumbed down definition of player development.
Well, I think player development, it was interesting. So Coach Pinone, I'm going to tie in Coach Saban to this a little bit, because I'm a big fan of Coach Saban, even though I know nothing about football. In fact, Kevin Kelly, you know, who won all the state championships at Pulaski Academy, is a good friend of mine. I tell him all the time when we talk, don't teach me anything about football. I just want to turn on the Wolverines and the Lions. Yesterday wasn't a great day. Hopefully tonight will be better with the Lions. and I want to be able to watch it non-analytically. So let's just talk about game theory. Let's not talk about football. I don't want to learn football. But Coach Pinone puts on a clinic at Alabama. We went, and Coach Saban was the guest speaker this year for one of the segments. And one thing he talked about was developing players. Like, you got to connect and develop a player before you can connect and develop a team. So now the answer is, what goes into that? And having been a G League coach, and I probably have a couple things in my career I'm more proud of, maybe, if you want to put it in those terms, but one of the things I'm most proud of is in the 3 years I was a G League coach, we led the league in call-ups. I never had the leading scorer. I never had the leading rebounder. I never had the leading assist guy. I didn't have anybody leading anything in any category in the league. player development is the people who do it well is a whole, what I would call a holistic approach. It's developing their skill set on the court. It's developing their mental capacity of how to approach and be a professional. It's develop, which includes subcategories of nutrition, sleep hygiene, recovery mechanisms, how to take care of your body. Like, you only get one body, it's only going to last so long. There's the video content. There's the personal content. Like, you have to invest in them and know their story so that you can best move the needle in each of those categories. So, I mean, we give our guys, like, we go through financial breakdowns with them now that they're all making money. And I think it's the holistic approach when you talk about player development. And then from a basketball standpoint, obviously all players need to get better at everything. I mean, I've coached multiple guys who are in the Hall of Fame. Each of them still had something they were missing. I would say Olajuwon probably wasn't missing much. But they all had things that they could grow at, even at that level, and the accomplishments they had. And it's an evolution. Like, you know, you start getting that good at something, maybe something slips. And then you have to do it in your system too. Like, you have to develop certain things that fit your system.
You mentioned football. So I thought it was interesting, and I know you guys have been able to talk about this a little bit, but your hometown is Belding, Michigan, and that's not too far away from where Butch Jones grew up in Saugatuck, right?
Correct. Where I live in Nashville is actually Franklin, Tennessee. It's 15 miles south of downtown. So Saugatuck is this quaint little town on the water south of Holland, Michigan. So from my house to Coach Jones' house is maybe an hour and 10 minutes. And when people from back home, Michigan being back home, ask me, like, where do I live in Nashville? And I say Franklin. My words to them after that are, just think of Saugatuck, but not on the water. And, oh, yeah, it creates a very – so when I first met Coach Jones – and I knew about his career because I try to keep track of the Michigan coaches as best I can. It was over at Ridge Point at the golf outing, and I told that story to him. And, of course, he had been to Franklin because when he was the head coach at Tennessee.
Sure.
And he started laughing. He said, there's not a more appropriate description. So, and he and I are the same age. I think we graduated the same year from high school. He might have graduated, but depending on our birthdays, 1 year ahead of me. So I graduated in 86. He either graduated in 85 or 86. But yeah, we're the same age. So I joke with him all the time, man. We're just a couple West Michigan coconuts trying to win some games, man. It's all we're trying to do.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea. Customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with A-State Assistant Coach Dean Cooper here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. So now you're here at Arkansas State. I want to know how you enjoyed these last few months and what excites you about this basketball team.
Well, I've enjoyed the last few months immensely. I mean, you, Matt, you were at the Hoops and Howls and every event that we've gone to. Again, for me, I was in a couple places, even though it had college stops before. Like, Buffalo was a big city. It's not really part of, and that was almost 30 years ago now at University of Buffalo. And then at RGV. So this is a place, first place I've been where, like, the community was truly invested and what goes on around the school. So every event we've gone to, they tell us, oh yeah, there might be 100 people here tonight, and then there's 250. There might be 200 on their street. And so when they first told us about Hoops and Howls, I think they were talking about 150, 200 people, and there are 400 people there the other night. So that really excites me. And everybody I talk to is excited about our seeing how we do, which is awesome. And then what really excites me about our team is we got really good dudes. They have a high care factor. We're big. We're long. We only have one player under 6'4", and that's Joey Chama. And he plays as hard as a day is long. He doesn't let his size be any level of detriment. So we're big. We can shoot it. We're versatile. We got good guys who have a high care factor. And we got a hell of a head coach, and we got a community that will support us. If that's not the ingredients to winning, I'd like somebody to give me the set of ingredients it is, because I think it points to having the train keep rolling down the track from where Coach Hodson left it.
In football, you can kind of see where, like, the way the college game is played eventually kind of has to influence the way they play in the NFL, because all these guys came from running spread offenses and this and that. So now you see it more in the NFL. It feels like maybe basketball might be the other way around. Is that fair, that kind of professional basketball, kind of what's the trends there will then trickle down to what's happening in the college game?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. It's interesting because I have a couple buddies who coach in the NFL, and it is interesting that the influence in the NFL actually comes from college. It seems, you know, sort of counterintuitive that that would be the case, but for some reason it is. And I think certainly the NBA will have an influence. And I think where you're going to see the next major shift in that, I don't hope somebody from the NCAA is listening, that the college basketball has to get off of halves and go to quarters like the women, because they are choking the game. They're holding the game back from an excitement level, a strategic level. You can go right down the list. And if you want to keep me on for about another 4 hours, we can go through all that. But I think when that finally happens, and there, from my understanding, is some momentum in that regard, then I think you're going to, not I don't think, I'm confident you're going to see a major alignment between NBA basketball and college basketball, which in my opinion is a good thing.
Listen, I'm with you.
We're with you.
Since the women made the change, I love the quarters. And to me, even if there's two reasons I love the quarters. Number one, every time you look up, the clock's under 10 minutes. And I think there's a mental thing about you never look up and see there's 18 minutes and change left. And then you never get in a situation where somebody gets in the bonus with 14 minutes to go and is shooting free throws.
That's the most draining thing, isn't it, Coach?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, if you got 4 hours, like, we can stay on here and talk about this and then send it to the NCAA. But it's multiple things. The two things you guys just mentioned are important. There's also, so like from an analytics standpoint, I'll just give you this one. So in the NBA, take out the fourth quarter, because you treat the fourth quarter a little bit differently than the end of it. Not always. So take the three quarters. You have three chances to get 2-for-1 opportunities. So this is a true story. When I was a head coach in the G League all 3 years, before we did our first stretch, did anything the first day of training camp, I hardly knew some of the guys' names. I walk in the gym, I grab them, I tell them, okay, here's our first 2 2-for-1 plays we're putting in. This is when they start. This is when we need to shoot. And this is what we're going to do. All before we do our first stretch, our first anything, because in my mind, if I execute 3 2-for-1s and I make 3 threes and I stop 6 threes and I stop you from scoring, I can start the game 18-0. I'm signing up for that. Not to mention the advancing the ball at the end of the game.
Sure.
All that stuff. It's just a better game.
Yep.
Yeah, better product.
Do you want me to keep going?
No. And I'm with you. We're just going to sit here and nod along to everything you're saying. But, yeah, you make a lot of great points there. I do want to ask you this, though, and we hear a lot about, and for good reason, Coach Pannone's offense and the fast pace of it, but you're also helping to serve in kind of a defensive coordinator role. So how will your defense and what you're trying to do on that end of the floor complement what Coach Pannone's trying to do on the other end?
Well, I think it'll complement a couple ways. One, we're going to pick people up full court, but we're not trying to create turnovers. Ironically, we're actually going to try to slow people down, meaning just get them later in the clock. Because if you know analytics, every tick that goes off the clock means that your offensive efficiency goes down. Everything we do on my side of the ball is converse to what he's trying to do on his side of the ball. He's trying to play fast to create points. I'm trying to get him to play slow to reduce their efficiency. We do everything based on efficiency, not points per game and things like that. So we're going to impact the ball in the pick and roll. We're not trying to create turnovers. We're going to try to get turnovers by our activity level, contesting passes, being in the right place. Like, we're not going to run around and stab and gamble and create open threes and layups, because on the possessions that we don't get those, now they're just getting easy looks. So it's the system we used with the Bulls. We were the highest turnover team in the history of the league in terms of opponents' percentage and deflections. We never one day, literally never one day, talked about creating turnovers except where the offense put us an opportunity to do it, which was put us in the pick and roll where we got two people around the ball, drive the ball baseline where we can trap the box and make you uncomfortable, and be in gaps where you try to drive a single gap and we can get some strips. Like, we're not running around out there crazy.
As we kind of wind things down here in the last few minutes, I am curious, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that are curious too, especially with all your time in the NBA. You've been around a lot of great players. You mentioned Hakeem Olajuwon. I'm guessing he's right at the top of the list as far as the greatest players you've ever been around. But give me another two or three names on that list.
That I just personally coached?
Yes, sir.
Well, fortunately, I got to coach in a few eras. I guess that speaks to maybe when I was coming in, going out, maybe longevity. Maybe I'm just old. So certainly Olajuwon is the top of that list. I was kind of going chronological order. That's the easiest way for me to do it. So when I first got to the Rockets, we had Olajuwon and Barkley. And then we had Yao and Steve Francis.
Man.
And then we had Mutombo and McGrady. Then I went to other places and end up in Portland, where I had guys like Brandon Roy. Unfortunately, his career was cut short because of the knee injuries. But, like, you want to talk about, like, a special talent, you know, and there were other guys that were good than when I was there, too. Andre Miller's the smartest player I've ever coached. I mean, it was insane. And also on that team was Marcus Camby, LaMarcus Aldridge, pretty good player. And then, obviously, in Utah. And then went back to the Rockets. And then that was, you know, Harden and Howard were the cogs of that team. Then Rudy Gobert and Gordon Hayward were when my time through Utah, and then into Chicago, you know, Zach LaVine, and I think Wendell Carter and Daniel Gafford are hellified players. Now, are they Hall of Famers? I don't know if they'll be that, but, you know, I mean, I had Shane Battier. I've known Shane Battier since he was 16 years old. Like, believe me, I tell people all the time, like, I've walked the golden path and done things I never dreamed of, and got lucky that people have gave me a chance and then allowed me to just hang around for a while. So I have a lot of good ones along the way. And most importantly, I think of all those guys I just mentioned, I would probably consider certainly all of them friendly, and many of them just friends. Like, they're just good guys that I can call and check on them, and they're just good human beings. And like that, I was very beyond fortunate with during that journey.
Whose basketball tree do you consider yourself a part of?
Luck. I would say, if you ask me that, I would say Rudy Tomjanovich. He was my first boss in the NBA. Let me rephrase that. That's a bad term, actually. He was my first mentor in the NBA. He's still a mentor. I talk to him several times a week. He's like my dad, my big brother, my uncle, my mentor, right down the street. And my parents were passed away. I got married pretty late in life, 43. I outkicked my coverage on that for sure. My wife's the all-star. But Rudy and Carol Dawson, who's now passed away, was the GM of the Rockets at the time. they did the things in my wedding that my parents would have done. That sort of tells you my level of reverence and relationship with those guys, and in particular Rudy, because we just, I just don't do a lot and make a lot of decisions, including coming here, without talking to him. Like, I trust him with all my might.
Yeah, he had one of the great all-time quotes after winning a championship: never underestimate the heart of a champion.
100%. And the coolest thing about him is, like, I pride myself on being a lifelong learner. Like, Rudy at, I don't want to give away his age, but he got drafted in 1971 out of Michigan, 71 or 2. And he consistently calls me and asks me questions, basketball questions, or just like, I mean, you talk about a perpetual learner. He's the epitome of it. And I don't know if I could have ever gotten luckier with having a mentor than Rudy Tomjanovich. I really don't.
Well, we're certainly lucky to have you at Arkansas State. We're absolutely thrilled to have you and Coach Pannone and the rest of the staff here. Can't wait to get the season going here in just about 3 weeks now. So appreciate you hopping on with us today, Coach.
Yeah, well, thank you. You guys have a great day, and we appreciate everything you do. And Wolves up, and we'll get it rocking and rolling here in a few weeks.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Man, that men's golf team is rolling right now.
Yeah.
They won the 30th annual Bubba Barnett Intercollegiate last week. Held at Ridgepoint. Second straight win for the team. A lot of good things to point out from this one. Milan Reed with a program record low round of a 10 under 62.
The one event after, you know, Thomas Schmidt had shot a 9 under in Colorado and had the second lowest score to par in NCAA men's golf history. Then Milan comes out and shoots a 10 under. We need him in here sometime because he's new to the program. Mm-hmm. Yeah, newcomer to Arkansas State, but he's gone and done that. But also, before he got here, like over the course of the summer, out in different big events and some of Europe, you know, he beat Thomas and I think Jay Klaus both in match play at different events over the course of the summer.
We'll definitely need to get him in here. I'm sure Thomas, he's like, man, can I have the record for more than a week? I mean, is that all I get?
I told Mike Hagan the other day after this event was over, I said, look, you're really good at what you do, but you might have really missed your calling to really make a lot of money selling something, because how you can get teams to still sign up to go over here and take that butt whipping is beyond me.
Yeah, there were 12 teams in that event, and it's a butt-whooping every single year. And as far as the team, they posted a record low round of 24 under. We had four of the top five individual finishers. All eight players finished in the top 50. The men have now won two of their four events this fall, and they're currently receiving votes in the Golf Coaches Association poll.
Could have shot even par each of the first two rounds, and still won by 7 strokes, I think, based on what they did Tuesday in the third and final round, where they just went crazy.
The men will now wrap up the fall portion of the schedule. The 20th through the 22nd, they'll be at the St. Mary's Invitational. That's in Monterey, California.
No, speaking of Thomas Schmidt, you know, Mark Taylor, he's kind of got a working document on his phone of where Thomas is. So right now,
I saw this too.
Thomas's stroke average is at 71.04 for his career. So he just passed Bryson DeChambeau. He was a 71.15.
He's sandwiched between DeChambeau and Tiger Woods.
Well, he is 0.08 of a stroke from catching Tiger Woods in college strokes per round score. 71.04 to 70.96.
So he's swimming with some pretty big fish.
Yeah, he really is. A guy that's going to play golf you know, hopefully for a long time, get to make a living. You hope that's the case. And then, like I said, the guys they have to go with them, they've really had a really, really nice fall. And like I said, starting to get, you know, people across the country paying a little bit of attention.
The women's golf team, they went to Lawrence, Kansas last week, competed in the Maryland Smith Sunflower Invitational. They finished 10th out of 14 teams, and they're currently hosting the Lady Red Wolves Classic out at Sage Meadows, so their annual event.
So, yeah, Monday, Tuesday, so if you're hearing this the day it comes out, then it's either still going on or just wrapping up their home event out at Sage. And I noticed over the weekend I met Troy's van coming into town, so they've got some of the Sunbelt teams in that field, so always a fun time out at Sage as they host their home event.
Volleyball had a big weekend. They swept their matches at ULM. They won in straight sets Friday. Did it again on Saturday.
And I think what's good for them, and this is without really having talked with Coach Gerwig after that, is it wasn't even that it was necessarily sweeps. They were pretty one-sided sweeps. Even the sets themselves, a lot of them were one-sided. I think this team was in a position where they needed to go beat somebody convincingly.
Well, they did that.
As funny as it sounds for a team that won a conference championship last year and has a lot of people back, I think they needed kind of a confidence boost, and hopefully that's what they came out of the weekend with.
Well, their schedule's just been so tough.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was good to be able to go on the road and do that. They're now 11-6 overall, 4-2 in the conference. They'll host Texas State this weekend.
Big ones.
Friday at 6 and then Saturday at 1.
So don't forget, like, if you went to that match at Valley View and they did the food drive, you got a voucher for, and, you know, good for a ticket to that match Saturday. So hopefully some big crowds, because these are some dates that as soon as the schedule came out, you had circled. Texas State was actually picked to win the West ahead of us. So big weekend at the bank for A-State volleyball.
Do want to mention the soccer team. Congrats on their first conference win of the year. They did it on the road, beat Southern Miss handily after struggling to score their last several matches. They broke out in a big way, and they were able to defeat Southern Miss 5-1 Sunday in Hattiesburg. They'll be back in action at home coming up on Saturday, 1 o'clock start time against Georgia State.
Yeah, volleyball and soccer start the exact same time Saturday, which is not the best. It's kind of a rare Saturday for soccer, but yeah, they're going to both be at home Saturday at 1. Of course, volleyball's got that Friday night at 6 matchup we talked about too.
Tennis will be competing at the ITA Regionals that starts Thursday in Norman, Oklahoma. And cross country will be back in action Friday. They'll be in College Station. It's their final event before the Sun Belt Championships. Do want to mention football, and it's kind of weird talking about it with this podcast coming out on Tuesday. If you're listening on Tuesday, of course, the Red Wolves playing tonight, taking on South Alabama at 6:30. And, you know, as we lead up to it, I'm just really anxious to see how our guys respond coming off that big win over Texas State.
Yeah. You and I were talking before we started recording here, and if we've learned anything about the Sun Belt so far, it's that we don't know anything about anybody, because you know, it feels like every time you kind of get a beat on what a team looks like, then the exact opposite happens. You get just a lot of people beating up on each other. A lot of teams a lot like one another, you know, because everybody's dealing with a lot of the same stuff, you know, ton of roster turnover. And it's just like, I mean, you never know week from week, game to game, what's going to happen in this league right now.
Fun episode. Really enjoyed talking with Dean Cooper. And that was a really cool event Thursday night, the Hoops and Howls. I've never heard of anybody else doing a preseason basketball event like that, where you've got everything a preseason banquet would have with the auction, the live and silent auctions. You've got the dinner. It looked great, but you had the tables on the floor, and the team was actually playing a preseason scrimmage, which I thought was really, really cool. And everybody that I've talked to at the event and since then seemed to really enjoy it.
Same. Ton of positive feedback about that format. I think it was a good event that I wouldn't think it'll change a whole lot. You just start tweaking because people really seem to like the setup. And how about those centerpieces? I thought that was one of the coolest parts. Every table had their own 3-point balloon.
I thought that was really cool. I'm sure Ken Stewart enjoyed that part too.
So I don't know. Did you go by Ken's table? He had been tipped off that was what it was. So he printed off a bunch of little bitty threes and had them taped all the way up and down the string at his table because he had been advised that that's what the centerpiece was going to be.
I absolutely love it. What a great idea. Just a really, really well done event. And I think people are, and you hear it from Coach Cooper, excited for good reason about this basketball season. Can't wait to get it going here in the next couple of weeks. Do want to thank Dean Cooper for joining us. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.